This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Bert Kreischer on the way. Golf's got sports insurance. We'll talk about the race this weekend. And, of course, you got everybody coming off a three-day Memorial weekend. And there was a lot of stuff going on, man. It was nice to get out, ride the motorcycle. We did a little work, got to the land a little bit, took care of all that business. I saw, we speak almost every day, but it's I was just watching Jesse over the last 3 months. Just, you know, he's never been home. We talked about this since he was 18 years old. He's never been home 3 months. He's never been home a month.
Right, which seems now incredible both ways with that right. Now he had to be.
Yeah, so he's been busy. We talked about the It Didn't Fall from the Sky truck and Uncle Sam, watching the whole very fabric of the society. And in time, the memory's going to fade. But if you remember now, when it all started to go down with the quarantine, they just went animal, like really weird and selfish. And like who knows why toilet paper became a thing, but that became the thing, and way more than you could ever use. Soups, beans, rice, anything people thought you'd have to have in, I don't know, times of drought and right. Famine. But what really saved the day from it becoming an even worse panic were truck drivers, delivery drivers, every kind of guy in a truck, in a flatbed, delivering car parts or medical parts, medicine, food, keeping the grocery stores filled. These guys were the absolute heroes of it. And it's real easy to let it slip by when you don't consider that the reason, even though we kept talking about how the stores look pretty thin, they would have looked a lot thinner if these guys weren't working 7 days a week. And so he ends up recording this song just because, for no other reason. And at the urging of a lot of friends, let it out to and put a video together to honor those truckers and those heroes that kept the whole thing together.
Well, there's a lonely stretch, asphalt heat. There's an 18-wheeler, 75-foot long, with a hero in the seat. Can't shut down, hear the diesel roar. He followed his daddy like his daddy before, grounding out those miles with a hammer down, put on the floor. And he lives a life he can never understand, but there's food on your table. He's a trucking Uncle Sam. He didn't fall from the sky or magically appear. He was brought here on his back.
Good morning.
Good morning, man. You made it back okay from spending the weekend with your family?
Yeah, had a great weekend. Of course, watching the news, it looks like we went right into the belly of the beast.
I had to laugh because I was trying to explain to him about Lake of the Ozarks, how weird it is down there. And he's been there plenty of times. But, of course, you guys were in your own condo all, you know, together, and just you and your family. But, yeah, those people were ready to party, weren't they?
You know, it's funny. I have been quarantined for 3 months, and I've never been home so much in my damn life. And since high school. And then, of course, when I leave, the first place, I mean, I have not left the compound at all. And the first place I go is right into the place that's making national news.
Yeah, I know. It's just
Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah,
because
you get it.
You know, here's what I think. Everybody should look at it like we should look at it like the glass is half full, and let's figure, okay, now we've got a real case study. Let's watch it, and then in the next 3 weeks, or however long you got a medical background, you can tell me how long we should wait. But let's see if we see a spike. I mean, it's going to be
That's right. Well, I'll tell you. Side note, and you and I I didn't want to bother you when you were with your family. But Bell, she's at a hotel. He had left a week ago to go down and work. And on the way back from Texas, he spiked a fever of 103 on Thursday and immediately didn't come to the house and went to a hotel. And he's been there ever since. And he's run a temperature every day. And he went in on Saturday and took a COVID test. And he won't know till today or tomorrow.
Wow.
But you know him. He's not a...
I've got, we talked about it. We've got a couple of buddies. One of them works at Harley Davidson. He and his wife was an airline, she's like high ranking Delta airline attendant, flight attendant, and she flies to China. She flies all over the world, and she came down with it, and she had it. Of course, you know, by the time they found out she had it, he had obviously been exposed, and so they both went through it. It took them about a little over 2 weeks to, almost 3 weeks, I guess, to get through the entire cycle of having it and having gotten through it and stuff. And then we got a family member that's had it and stuff. And if you can't, it's like swimming. If you can't swim, don't jump in the water. And
that's
if
right.
You can't afford to get this COVID, you got to really self-quarantine and stuff. Otherwise, we got to find our balance. Everybody's got to find their truth with it. But,
you got common sense. Like, I was reminded, and this is what great...
Who does?
You have great... I'm telling you, you do. We're laughing about... You and I, I'm talking to him about the run on guns and bullets, and you couldn't get bullets. And it was just funny because you could hear Jesse laughing at his breath. He's like, why wouldn't you have bullets for your guns? And I realized, I believe your quote was, oh, I've got enough bullets. He goes, one of them will get me before I run out.
That's what I told you. So I got plenty enough bullets that the odds are before I even get halfway through or even started on it, good, somebody will tap me or something.
Yeah, but that's common sense to me. If you had the gun, one day you might need to use it. You might want to have something to put in it. It's and that brings me to that supply discussion. You know, you get stuck at the house, and you come from a trucking background. You had a CDL when you were 18, 17, 18 years old. Hell, your dad went into Hawk to buy the band before your record deal, an 18-wheeler, didn't he?
Yeah, well, I've got to correct you on something. Uh-huh. I've owned two tractor trailer rigs in my life. And because back, when I came out of high school, all of the touring circuit for cover bands playing, other people's music, the touring circuit was fat and happy. And you could stay gone for months at a time playing, two nights here, three nights here, a whole week here, whatever. And you do 3 1-hour sets a night. That's where I learned how to sing. You go out and do all this cover stuff. And also, bands used to carry their own sound systems and their own light shows back then. And the band that made the better money was the band that had the bigger productions, and of course the band had to be good as well. And there was a couple of bands that had tractor trailer rigs, nice rigs with their logos down the side and stuff. And I told my dad, I said, I need to really, figure out a way, because I'd grown and we were making some good money as for a cover band, and we were staying busy all the time. And I told my dad about the bands that had the tractor trailer rigs and stuff. And one day I wanted to get a tractor trailer rig. So he goes, I found a tractor trailer rig. And it was like, $4,500 or something. It was one of the first tractor trailer rigs that had a little straight engine, a Detroit motor in it that had been around since, 1902.
Right.
And, but it was a cab over GMC. And, we got that thing. But I've owned two tractor trailer rigs. And never had a CDL license. I've gotten pulled over in weigh stations, pulled over for speeding.
Are you kidding? You don't have a CDL? I thought for sure you had a CDL. I've seen you drive your tour bus.
I've driven buses. I'll tell you, you'll like this story, and I think I've told this to you a long time ago. But so I've come home from the road with the band, and we were riding in a Datsun 210 station wagon. This is like the first band out of high school, right?
Right.
And I come home, and we lived in this, lower middle class neighborhood. And I come home, and my dad had went and picked up that tractor trailer rig we'd found for a good price. And I'm serious, it was like $4,000 or so. It was like, it might have been cheaper than that. I think they wanted $4,000, and we paid $3,700 or so. It was like a, but anyway, big cab over GMC tractor with a 40-foot trailer on the back of it that was sitting in the ditch, basically, because it wouldn't go in their driveway, obviously, that little neighborhood. And so it was propped up on the side of the road, leaning over in the ditch, and I tell the guys in the band, let's take that thing for a ride. Y'all come on. And we get up in it, and the band's all up in the sleeper and sitting in the passenger seat and stuff. You know, John Hayes was one of them. And we were all up in that thing, and I'm in the driver's seat of that tractor trailer rig. And they said, can you drive this thing? And I went, hell yeah. And I sat there, and I fired up, and I'm sitting there trying to figure it out, and I finally get the air built up in it because there's an old truck, so it took a minute for the air to build up, release those brakes, you know, and then I pull out of the ditch, and I get up to the stop sign in the neighborhood, and if I made a left, I went out of the neighborhood, and if I made a right, I could circle around the neighborhood. So I thought to myself, I better play it safe because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. So I ease out around that corner. I'm going around the neighborhood, and I get on the back side of the neighborhood, and I'm hearing this noise. You know, I'm hearing all hell breaking loose. I'm going, what the hell is that? And so I'm starting to kind of get, I was going slow anyway, so I start going even slower. People are coming out of their houses. They're coming out of their houses like, what the hell's going on? So I finally just stop the truck. And I pull the damn air brake. You know, that damn thing stops right there in the neighborhood. And I get out, and I had snagged everybody's power lines going into their houses. It looked like rubber band stretched up around the top of that trailer. That trailer was 13-6 high, so it was an extra high trailer, the furniture moving trailer. It was 13-6 high, and I had snagged every power. It like jerked the damn the poles out of the tops of people's houses. And this was on a Sunday during football season. Oh. So the guys, so the people had lost their football games, and they're out there, and they're looking at me, and I'm sitting going, oh, you know, what am I going to do? So I just thought, well, my name is Dupree. You know where I live, you know. And we got up on top of that trailer and pulled those cables. I backed up a little bit. We pulled the cables up and let them slide down the back of that trailer. And I took that thing back, parked it, and I thought I was going to be in big trouble. But come to find out, the power lines were not regulation height. And so I didn't get in trouble about it. But it pissed off neighbors.
Dude, and I've seen him drive. Like, I didn't know he'd have a CDL. We were doing a show at the Full Throttle Saloon, the original Throttle. And DSS had brought up this monster rig. It was literally a semi that came apart. The trailer opened up and shot these giant LED screens up into the air. I mean, unbelievably large. And they were trying to figure out how you could possibly get it through this hole that was only less than a foot wider than the actual truck. And it was on, not on asphalt, this is on dirt. So, and it's on a bit of an incline, and it backs into the audience. And they were working at it and working at it and working at it. And these are good drivers. And I see Jesse get frustrated and go, God damn it, I'll do it. And I just, and without ever touching a brake, forward and threw it in reverse and went 40, 50 feet back, punched it through that perfect hole perfectly, stopped it, got out, and walked away without telling anybody anything. Hey, do you remember that?
Yeah, it's been a while. Yeah
dude, it's ridiculous.
I'll tell you something else, a shorter story. Whenever I first, when I got that thing, we took it on the road, and I was driving that thing around with the band, And I called home and told my dad, because my dad did drive a tractor trailer rig for a while, and because I grew up, that's a whole other story. But I called my dad. I said, this thing's not stopping too good. And he goes, well, that's a big truck. You got to anticipate your stops. Right. I said, okay. And it just got to where, I mean, I'd look, you know, 400 yards up the way and start anticipating, because that thing was not stopping.
Yeah.
And finally, I was coming through Birmingham, Alabama, and I came up on a traffic jam, and I was like, oh, God. And I took that thing off the side of the interstate on the shoulder of the road, and there's a big and the ass end of that trailer was literally hanging down, dragging down that hill.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, and I got a thing, and I said, I got to do something. So I carried it straight to a shop. And the fella taught me how to get back up underneath it. He goes, so when was the last time you adjusted these air brakes? And I said, I don't know how to do that. And
Jesus Christ.
So the mechanic guy gets up underneath there and shows me how to adjust, which was a really simple process. Got the brakes adjusted and stuff, and I went to stop that first time, and that damn thing is right on its nose. I mean, they stopped so good, but yeah, it's funny.
I didn't know all these years I've seen you literally where a tour bus driver couldn't get your bus parked, and these are big 56-foot, you know, Prevost tour buses. And Jesse go, oh, I got it. Don't worry about it. And then literally parallel park a bus on a busy downtown city street before.
Well, you know, when Jackal got our first record deal, it was a really big deal for us to get into a bus. I mean, we felt we were doing something. I mean, we were so proud. We had us a bus. We were going to be rock stars. We were out there doing our thing. And we get to touring, and we were coming across the panhandle of Florida. And the first Jackal album broke really huge, and we had been booked to play a bunch of large clubs and mid-sized venues, but the band had broke really huge, and most of the promoters had graduated us and moved the show to bigger venues, right? And we were out headlining, touring around, and some of the promoters decided, no, we're just going to keep you in the venue in for whatever reason, and so it was just a crazy time where everybody was, you know, coming out to see the band, and, you know, and we were on the bus, and the bus driver got, actually the tractor trailer rig driver, because we had a tractor trailer, the tractor trailer rig driver had a medical issue, and he had to go in the hospital. And so we were stuck there that night after the show. We'd take him to the hospital, and there we were with a truck and a bus and only one driver. So the bus driver had been wanting to drive the tractor trailer rig, because it's a really nice tractor trailer, a big Kenworth long nose. So the bus driver goes and drives the tractor trailer rig, and I drive the bus. And we were running late when we get down. We took the whole thing with the hospital and just everything that went on. We were running late getting to the venue that next afternoon down in southern Florida. And we pull in, and there's people lined out around the building. And they're out lined around. And I'm driving the bus in. And everybody sees me driving the bus, and Jeff Worley sticks his head up. He goes, great, we look like the damn Partridge Family.
Well, that's the point of all this. When we were talking about it didn't fall from the sky, trucking Uncle Sam is, you know, you were stuck in quarantine. You're at the house. You're at your studio, Cock of the Walk. And you just, you know, people don't know this about you, but you write songs all the time. And a lot of them never see the light of day. You write for you. You write to get whatever you want to put down. And then sometimes you come up with something that's out of the pocket for Jackal, and we all heard the song and went, man, you really ought to let people hear that. Just something for the truckers. I mean, at a time when these guys have worked their ass off, the truckers and mechanics and everybody who keeps it together, I thought that was that Jerry Reed kind of, you know, C.W. McCall feel.
Well, you know, I've got a full country album that I've recorded that I haven't released yet, and I've been sitting on it for about the last year, you know, just figuring out how and if I'd release it and such. And actually, you know, there's a couple of songs on there that you and I wrote together. There's a couple of, I redid Just Because I'm Drunk Don't Mean You're Right, that wrote with Bob, and I redid both of those songs country style. But I've got a whole album's worth of country songs recorded, and I've been sitting on it and looking, you know, for, you know, the right time and the right way to release it. And then the pandemic happened, and then I ended up writing, you know, It Didn't Fall from the Sky, because I've got an honest connection with truck drivers. As you know, when I was a kid, you know, I came home from school one day, and my dad had lost his job at Lockheed and lost everything we had. Hell, he sold my bicycle. I mean, he sold everything we had, and we moved to Gadsden, Alabama, and we lived about a quarter of a mile down the road from a steel plant in Gadsden, Alabama, in a mobile home trailer on the backside of an asphalt parking lot where there was a little cafe. And my dad couldn't even boil water, but he decided he was going to buy a cafe. And all the truck drivers used to come in and eat breakfast, lunch, or dinner when they were hauling the steel from the steel plant, you know, all over America. And we got to know those guys. They got to be our extended family. And a lot of, you know, it's interesting. If you just back up for a second from your life and from everything that's going on and just realize there's the last cowboys out there, these guys driving these tractor trailer rigs, and the independent truck driver especially, that ecosystem is getting, you know, basically you know, extinct because of all the leaks and the big corporate America and that kind of thing. And it's kind of, it's a shame and it's sad because it's such a big piece of Americana, but it's also a necessary thing that we need, you know, is the independent truck drivers to still be able to make their living. So, because, you know, it's what keeps everything honest. And so, I wrote the song. We always appreciate the first responders. And even when there's not a pandemic, I think America does a good job of acknowledging our first responders, and whether it be doctors, firemen, police officers, whatever the case may be. And we do appreciate them. But I just didn't feel like the truck drivers were getting, you know, the props that they needed, because as you mentioned before, the grocery stores, they were run on grocery stores. You know, and those guys, you know, stepped up and made sure that they kept the shelves restocked. And I just wanted to write the song. It comes from an honest place. And I'm enjoying singing different. You know, I mean, it's a challenge for me to learn how to use different parts of my voice. And after this many years, to be able to stretch out and do something like that.
Sure.
And, you know, Jackal's just a country band turned up to 12. And Jackal's still kicking. We'll do 100 shows a year again as things open up and we can get back out and play. But in between that, I'm going out and doing Dixie Inc. I want to bring Dixie Inc., the country band. I want to bring and play something like Knuckleheads or something. I want to come play Knuckleheads, maybe shoot a video or something at Knuckleheads one night, and it'd be a lot of fun.
Well, I'll tell you, and I even have a hard time calling the album country, because today's country, that's not what we're talking about. This is to me, it reminds me of the old outlaw country. It reminds me of Waylon, and it reminds me of Cash, and it reminds me of you know, what we used to, what we grew up on, what we used to hear, the new, and this is not a shot at Dan and Shay, but it's just a different style completely. And so,
yeah, you know, and I played Don Wayne Reno playing banjo. I mean, you know, he's a legendary banjo player out of Nashville, and Hank Jr., keyboard player. And what about Roman playing that stand-up bass? Yeah. If you go watch the video, and we were in quarantine, right? And obviously I couldn't go out and shoot a video. And so I was able to reach out. We put a link up, and we asked truck drivers across the country to just upload, you know, videos of them out on the road and from across the country. And sure enough, they filled up the inbox, and we were able to snag a good bit of that content and put it in the video. It's on YouTube under It Didn't Fall from the Sky. But you can see Roman playing that electric Dean stand-up bass, and he's just whipping that thing's ass, doing great.
No, that's what I mean. This to me, it's honest. It's nice. It's not like, you know, when an Aaron Lewis comes from Stain and decides he wants to be a country music guy, it never feels honest to me. You know, where you come from and what your background is, especially leading with It Didn't Fall from the Sky, Truck and Uncle Sam. When people hear the rest of this, if you like old school country, you like stuff with heart and a story, you're going to think it's great. If country's not your thing, well, then that'll be that. But there's an honesty to it. And I think that, you know, when we went through this, as we come out of it now and we our memories start to fade about what it really felt like, we were all pretty on edge. People were uncertain, and I'm not saying scared, but there was a lot of scary things going on. Will there be food? Will we have a way to control our lives? Will we be able to get our money out of a bank? There were all these unanswered questions. And the one thing that never stopped are these old truck drivers, these guys out there, these blue-collar guys that somewhere in the 80s, we turned our back on working-class people and somehow told all the children that you don't want to work with your hands, you don't want to build things, you don't want to go out and labor, you want to get a lot of money for doing very little, and that's what you call a success now. And what could be a bigger failure when an emergency happens? What could be a bigger failure than to not have enough people to fix our roads, fix the trucks, bring the food? All these entitled people never consider how the farmer grew it, how the ranchers brought the cattle in, how everything happens. And I'm as guilty as anyone. But
let me bring it on home even closer. This is why everyone listening should think about it at least for one second. And that is, these independent truck drivers, as I stated earlier, when I say they keep things honest, independent truck drivers are the ones that keep a balance on the cost of freight of getting that stuff across America. And if the independent truck drivers get out of the way and it comes down to just these fleets, then we won't have any checks and balances on what it costs, and that's going to affect our grocery prices and everything else, because, you know, once these fleets get a hold on it, you know, there's no turning back. And these independent truck drivers are necessary. Just, you know, it's the same thing as the bees. You know the story that, we've killed off some of our bees in areas, and these farmers have to import bees in, to pollinate our crops and stuff. I mean, how crazy is that?
Right.
And when you start messing with that ecosystem, I mean, you could seriously be messing with what you're eating and what you know what's in front of
That's
you.
That's right.
And these truck drivers are necessary, not to get deep and heavy, but they're necessary. And you know what? I see something else, too. Is when I was growing up, and some people may remember, when I was growing up, a truck driver out on the road was almost kind of like a safety net, because if you had car problems or if you had a wreck or whatever, those truck drivers would stop and be right there for you to help.
Right.
These fleets now, they don't allow those drivers to stop. They could see somebody standing along the side of the road on fire, and then they can't stop.
No,
you know, because of corporate rules. And I don't know, they're just those the independent truck drivers are the last cowboy heroes out there, and you know, I want to preserve them.
I feel the same way, man. When I was a kid, They were bigger than life. I remember seeing Smokey and the Bandit the first time, and Jerry Reed as the Snowman, and being tore the F up over whatever I just witnessed. And it was anti-establishment, and the good guys win, and they're brash, and they're over the top. And yeah, from that moment on, like everything as a kid, you're like, truck drivers are the greatest thing ever. And you'd, you know, ride in the back of your mom and dad's car, and you'd give them the arm pump, and they'd honk their horn. You thought you'd really done something. You know, you'd connected with one of those heroes on the road.
So you think, talking about that, smoking the banners, I told Don, the road crew, the Jackal road crew, I told him, I said, hey, I want you to take the truck, because I was in Sturgis, and this is whenever I was just starting out doing the Jesse James beer, and we were doing it there in St. Joe, Missouri, right?
Yep.
And I said, hey, I want you guys to swing by and pick up some beer and bring it up to me so I can sell it at the Full Throttle. So they go down and they get loaded up with a couple of pallets of beer on the. Now this is all Jackal's musical equipment.
Right.
It's up in the front, and they had this back section that we put several pallets of the Jesse James beer. They make it all the way from Kansas City, all the way up to, from St. Joe, all the way up to Sturgis, and they come, you know, that weigh station right there before you get to Sturgis. They whoop into that weigh station and they sit there on the scales for a while. And they sit there and sit there, and they had that red light up. They wouldn't let them go anywhere. They sit there, and they finally, those cops, so they come out there, and they ask them to get out and open the back. And what had happened, whenever that truck sat on the scales, all that liquid in it made the truck rock, you know, because the liquid, that's how they knew that something was in there that shouldn't be in there. And Don called me and goes, you need to do something. We're going to jail. And so I called. He ended up putting me on the phone with the sergeant that was in charge of the thing. I talked to him for a minute, and I you know, just kind of eased up against it, being nice and asking him please to help me out here and stuff. And he goes, and he was, luckily he was a fan of the Full Throttle, and he was cool. And he said, Jesse, I'm not supposed to do this, but he goes, if you can get some pickup trucks to get up here and get this stuff out. He said, we'll turn our head, and, you know, and this never happened. He said, but your boy that we just busted with the pot is going to jail. and we got up there.
Hell.
One of our road crew guys in the back of the police car, and we unloaded. We had three pickups, I think it was, and we loaded everything down into that and headed onto the throttle.
Yeah, it's never a dull moment. And we got Sturgis coming up. We're going to find out. I saw what the mayor said yesterday, and it was such a great point about Sturgis. And he just, it's such an honest, common sense answer. They were saying, you know, well, you know, if the city doesn't endorse it, and he goes, why do you think that will stop the rally? The rally's been happening for, you know, 80 years. And he goes, they're going to come whether or not you sell an official T-shirt. That's you don't have it. You can't stop them from coming. So you better figure it out. And I.
Well, you just touched on the thing, is, you know, the city had allowed a company called SMRI to grab the trademarks and own the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally name for several years, and they were going around and busting all the people that had been making a living for, you know, 60, 70 years, whatever, making Sturgis Rally T-shirts. And because they just thought that it didn't belong to anybody, because it's a town, and it's just where it's a destination where people go to have the rally, where Pappy Hoyle started the thing 80 years ago, and so they ended up going to court. There's a bunch of local people, a bunch of businesses took them to court, and it made it all the way up like the Supreme Court that they did not own the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally, and nobody owns that, and so the city has got to redefine what they're saying. They can decide whether or not they want to participate, but they can't say we're not having a rally. I mean, you know, it's not a stadium. It's not a an arena. It's not a, you know, I mean, it's a destination. I mean, we talked to the mayor ourselves a week ago, and he said there's already more traffic in the Black Hills right now than there ever has been this time of year. I mean, it's just like the Lake of the Ozarks and such, just in general, everywhere across America. We've been pent up for, you know, 3 months. I mean, everybody's ready to get the hell out.
Sure.
And again, it's a serious virus, but I mean, we got to find our balance and we got to find our common sense. Everybody's got to find their own truth as to, do your own homework as to how applicable the things are to each individual and be respectful. Don't be an a-hole and be respectful of each other.
Well, that's only, it, man.
Only Bob able to be an a-hole.
Exactly, Bob. The point is just, I wanted to make was just, yeah, you have the right to go out. You should. But also remember, you don't have the right to drag something around with you and give it to some poor other bastard. So, you know, just if you choose to get into a crowd, then just choose to wear a mask when you go out, when you go in close contact. It's simple stuff, man. Everybody has the right. And I don't want to, you know, especially coming off Memorial Day. You know, I really took a second to stop and think about the people that, what does service and sacrifice really mean? And I got to tell you, it's a slap in the face to any fallen soldier, to anybody who ever even served, to any frontline worker, any cop injured in the line of duty, and fireman burned in a building, to say that somehow your freedom is being encroached upon. These soldiers really laid it out there over Memorial Weekend. So we can complain, we can say we don't agree, but don't say that somebody's taking your freedom. You know, you never fought for it.
The truth is in the middle. The truth is in the middle. Nobody should have the right to go make somebody else sick, like you said. And we got to, it's just they politicize whether if you wear a mask,
that's right,
you're a Democrat, and if you don't wear a mask,
that's
you're a Republican. That's not the truth. I mean, and you know, make no mistake about it. The government in places are still way overreaching. I mean, I just watched the news this morning. I mean, New York's numbers are down below the scale of where they said they could open things back up, and Cuomo's still keeping a clinch around their neck. California's, you know, there's plenty of reason for us to be upset of overreaching. That crazy lady in Michigan, I don't know how the hell she ever got to be governor, but again, it's not just the politics. We got to somehow or another separate the politics from the reality of the virus, but the politics are getting stupid, man. Both sides, anybody that's extreme polarized to the left or to the right needs to back up for a minute. And I mean, save that for the WWE wrestling, because that's what they kind of make us all.
And I'd like to point something out. I'd like to point this out. You might notice that Jesse and I don't always see exactly eye to eye on every subject. And oh, look, we're friends. It's called respect. It's okay to disagree. It's okay to not have the exact same opinion. We may not vote the same way. We may not be exactly in the same pocket. It's fine. Isn't that amazing? People cannot be in lockstep with each other and have the exact same thoughts and still be friends. Amazing, isn't it?
You know, I like the conversation. If you can, you know, nobody's got it figured out. I mean, somebody else started digging in and making a stance for me the other day about it. On the other side, and I said, you know, with all due respect, we can't have that kind of a conversation because you don't know. And you know what? I don't either. None of us really know. We just got to find our way through this.
That's
because
right.
There's nobody that's all right and nobody that's all wrong in this. The only people that are all wrong are the damn politicians. I mean, other than that, we got to find our way through it. But I do enjoy the conversation. And again, I'm glad that it looks like we're on the backside of this. I'm hoping that, you know, I do want to see in the next couple, 3 weeks, if, you know, hopefully pray to God that, you know, that there's not a big spike after the Lake of the Ozarks. I mean, let's just watch it and see. And maybe we can find out, you know, the CDC is already, you know, kind of redefining things. So we're going to learn from this, and we're going to learn the things we got to do to protect each other and be respectful. We're going to have a rally this year in Sturgis. And again, if you can't afford to get that virus, stay home. Or go to the Black Hills and have the virus try to catch you doing 50 on the back of your Harley Davidson through the Black Hills and stay apart from everybody. But I think we're going to find our way through it. It's still several weeks out, and again, I'm glad to have gotten out of the house this past weekend. It feels good to have a little bit of a little bit of normal.
Yes. Dude, I tell you, riding's been great. And that's the thing, is riding motorcycles is probably the best socially distant thing you can possibly do. Going up to Sturgis, we'll figure it out. But like, you think about your campground. What's more contained than your own tent, than your own cabin, than your own camper with your own people outside with showers that are cleaned every single time another person comes out? It can be done, and it will be done. Look, we'll get back there. That's August. That's a long ways away, man. Believe it or not, we're still another 8 weeks away from that. So,
yeah, we spoke with the mayor and the city over this past week, and the conversation we're going to have about it today is different than the conversation we're going to have in 2 weeks and 2 weeks after that. And again, we'll hopefully become smarter about what the reality is, and weed the politics out of things, and learn more about to respect the virus and in the ways that we need to. And we'll get through it. I mean, this will be a moment in time, though. Think about it. The people that lived through that pandemic of 1917 or whatever.
Yeah.
It was. I mean, we just went through something that was far, crazier, just because of how small the world's gotten with the internet and 50 news channels and everything else. So I'm glad to be see some kind of light at the end of the tunnel, and then hopefully if we can all make it through November and this damn election.
That craziness. That's goddamn. Don't bring that. That's because that's when the people are gonna get really weird. I just want a summertime. I want another summer. I want a summer. That's it. I want to go ride motorcycles. I want to get sunburnt. I want to go work on the land a little bit. I want to hang out and drink some beer. And how close we can get to one another, we'll just have to figure out. But we're definitely going to keep living. And I'm excited for this song, man.
You hit on it. I mean, one of the safest things to be doing if you want the social distance is to get on the back of a Harley Davidson. And they're making the best bikes they've ever made. And yeah, I work with the company, and I'm proud to be partners with them in Sturgis, and proud to be partners with Worth Harley Davidson and Outlaw Harley Davidson. But they are. Seriously, they are making the best motorcycles they've ever made. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's true. All right, brother, listen, I'll call you later, man, and I'll remind everybody you can go get It Didn't Fall from the Sky, Truck and Uncle Sam, Spotify. Get it on iTunes. You can download it. You can stream it. Go give it a check. Go send it as a thank you to a truck driver,
The first concerts of this year looks like they're going to be in Sturgis at the Full Throttle Slim, so whether you ride or not, make your reservations, get you a campsite, whatever, come up there, and we'll figure out a safe way to have the first concerts of 2020.
Yeah.
Full Throttle Saloon,
God damn, wait till that bomb goes off. That's going to be amazing. That'd be great.
Come on. Well, you guys have a great day. Be safe, and call me later.
Our magically appear, he was brought here on his back, shifting 10 hard gifts, counting 18 wheels, 80,000 pounds, stacking in fall from the sky. He was carried on his back.
Incredible. You can have friends that don't believe exact same thing, and you don't yell at each other on Facebook.
Listen to people.
Yeah, it's called. That's it. And that's what I try to do. I just listen. I go, all right. And then you present another discussion, and that's everybody's just screaming. Everybody's ears are turned off, and their mouths are turned on 10. So, said the loudmouth disc jockey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.